Thanks, Darren, for sharing that, mate. And thank you to David, Erica, and Sam for giving us so much of yourself. That was brilliant. Thank you. We will now, after just having a short moment's silence, we only have about 5 or 6 minutes until Larsine's booked in to talk. I know it's getting late at night over there, so not over me yet. My name's Damien. I am an alcoholic. Sorry it was such a short break, but I'm kind of aware that on the East Coast, this session will finish at 1:30 a.m. So I want to say thank you to all you people over there that have stayed up late. We got up kind of early, and it was a little bit of a juggling act to find a way that we could get all these speakers in that we could all listen to. So I hope we've done a fair job with that. I would like to maybe just begin this session with a moment's silence for the still sick and suffering alcoholic and their family members inside and outside the rooms. Okay, so it now gives me great pleasure to announce our final speaker for day one, the Fellowship of the Spirit International Lockdown 2020, from Al-Anon, Larsine G from Hawthorne, California.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, hi everybody. My name is Larsine and I'm a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon. I want to thank Damien and everyone who's had anything to do with this, you know, for the invitation to get to be here. I've been on all day and I've just, you know, it's just fabulous stuff that we get to hear here and that we get to be in this kind of a format. I'll tell you for sure, this is the latest I've ever spoken, you know, as a speaker anywhere. And, but I will rest assured, it's not the first time I've stayed up late to talk to alcoholics. So we're all good with that. It all works out kind of even Steven here. So, I just want to say, you know, I wish you all the best. I hope everyone's staying safe and healthy, you know, while we're going through this really unprecedented thing that we've never done before. Doing these Zoom meetings, you know, is definitely, to me, a lifesaver. There's just such comfort in seeing you out there and knowing that you're all there and that, you know, and even though, you know, we're being in a way forced to not be together, there's no way on God's earth that can stop us from being together because we do find a way. Earlier when Bill and those guys were all talking and we had the Zoom crash, you know, and everything went down, you know, I want you to know, as an Al-Anon, you know, I was probably in my finest hour because I did not feel compelled to have to text Damien or Bill or anybody else to let them know there was a problem. Al-Anon 38 plus years has taught me, you know, that they can figure that out for themselves and I just need to sit tight and hang in there. So, I'm really happy that I can report my behavior to my sponsor tomorrow. So I've had a great day. I'm just going to jump into a little bit about what it was like, what happened and what it's like for me today. I'm the oldest of four kids. My dad was a master sergeant in the Army. And so I grew up with a lot of discipline, a lot of organization. It's just the way it went down in our house. My dad ran our family just like he did the Army. We had little Army cots in our room with little lockers at the end of it where we stored our gear. And I remember being a little kid, 4 and 5 years old, standing at the end of that foot locker, you know, waiting for my dad to do room inspection, popping a quarter on my bed, saluting me saluting him back. I mean, that was just, you know, and I grew up with a lot of discipline that way. It was, and I look back at that and I'm really happy about it because I am an organized person. I like details. I love rules and regulations. I like knowing what you want me to do and how you want me to do it. And it has served me well. It has absolutely served me well. I didn't think so much when I got here that it did. But again, you know, as we've heard so many people talk about the steps, how more is revealed, how looking at everything from a different angle, which I could never do without, without the blessings of the 12 steps to get to work and see all these things that I thought were so terrible in my life. You know, not all of them were. Not all of them were. They made me be the person that I am. You know, following all these speakers that you've had today is a little bit intimidating. You know, I always liken being the Al-Anon speaker at an AA conference. It's like being the corpse at an Irish wake. No one expects you to say much, but they can't have the party without you. You know, so it's, you know, I'm trying to fit myself in here with all of that. But But what I know, you know, growing up, is what I didn't know was that my dad was alcoholic. I had no idea that that's what was going on in my house when we were growing up as a little kid. You know, it's not like you get a brochure and say, hey, your dad's an alcoholic. So that's going to explain a lot about what's going to go down in your house. I just learned early on, you know, that the day went on, and I attributed it more to the son than I ever did his drinking as a little kid. As the day went on, things just got bad. And that's just, you know, nighttime was bad. Nighttime was scary. Nighttime was when MP showed up and all those things kind of happened. Again, I had no idea it was the progression of my dad's drinking during the day. Because how do you know that as a little kid when that's what you grow up with every single day? And my dad was just this really, and he was a very angry drunk. You know, I wish he was a happy guy and all, but he wasn't. He was very angry. He was very violent. And I don't know where all that comes from or why some people are happy drunks and why some people are angry drunks. And I'm not here to try and explain that or do whatever or prove my case is worse than anyone else's. We all kind of get who we get as parents. And in reality, what I know today as a result of, you know, of all the step work that I've done too, is that ultimately my dad was a good person who was afflicted with the disease of alcoholism. And it affected him in, you know, in the description that they talk about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. For my dad, you know, it was total insanity and death. My dad was just, I could never understand exactly where it all came from or why it all happened. When I was really new in Al-Anon, I went to lots and lots of open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new in Al-Anon, I cannot recommend that enough. It says in our Al-Anon literature that we should learn all we can about the disease of alcoholism. And I know no better place to learn that than in attending open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and reading the big book of AA. And I remember being at one of those very first meetings, and the alcoholic that night, he shared about alcoholism, the family disease. That was his talk. And he described alcoholism, the family disease, as like having a rhinoceros in your living room, but everybody pretends it's a coffee table. And if I have to describe the house that I grew up in, boy, that's the house that I grew up in, because we never discussed the stuff that went on in our house. You know, I was born in the 50s and 60s, and what happened in your house stayed in your house. And especially, we were always in military housing with always other military families. I mean, and my dad's, you know, he was a master sergeant, and boy, we had to keep that record as clean as we could. And, you know, all of that stuff that went along with it. And anyway, you know, and to describe, you know, that situation for us, you know, my mom, she could always tell when my dad was going to have one of his alcoholic explosions because it happened every day. So it wasn't that hard. But when we'd be at the dinner table, you know, my mom would, you know, just one of the first things I think that goes out of the home in active alcoholism is any kind of verbal communication. So if you're sitting at the dinner table and then your mom's looking at you and you're a little kid and your mom's like, you know, we know what that means. It's not an epileptic fit. That means, you know, nobody talk, nobody do anything because your dad's going to explode. And of course, if your dad's going to explode, nothing was going to stop that from happening. A minor infraction, you could scrape your knife on your plate, you know, or something. And my dad would go ballistic and everybody, you know, all the dishes would go flying, dinner would go flying, everybody'd get a beating, everybody'd have to go to bed 5 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody goes to bed, my mom, the kids, the dog, it's just the way it goes down in our house. You know, and then I remember getting up the next morning and creeping down the hallway to go to school, and there'd be my dad at the breakfast table having his breakfast beer. And no one said, geez, whiz, Dad, what was that about, Dad? Gee whiz, how come you had to hit everybody? How come you had to break everything? You know, because in our house, you know, it was just like it never happened. It's like the, you know, the rhinoceros went to being back to being a coffee table. So that night when I heard that alcoholic talk about that, boy, I identified right away. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love going to AA meetings. I love hearing AA speakers. I've learned so much from Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, I am so, so grateful to a sponsor, you know, and the steps that I was taught in Al-Anon, you know, about, you know, you don't know who your teachers are going to be. You have absolutely no idea. So you have to be open to it. And if you hear something that touches you and touches your heart and touches you in places that you didn't even know you had there, then listen to that. Listen to that, because that's God guiding you through all these things you thought that you could never get through. And so, you know, and again, these are all the things that started me on this journey of recovery. You know, just to fast forward with my dad, because there's all kinds of things I could tell you about that. But ultimately, my dad ended up dying. He was 55 years old. He died the death that they talk about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, total insanity and death. I really can't tell you the last words my dad said to me because they were so vile and so vulgar, I would not begin to repeat them. And I always say the last words my dad said to me, when in reality, what I know today are those are the last words that my dad's alcoholism said to me. Because again, going to lots of open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have learned so much. And what I've come to learn is, you know, is that's just what alcoholism did to my dad. Is just, it just took him all the way to the end. You know, and if that wasn't enough, you know, it made him absolutely insane and crazy. And then it took the life. And before it did take the life of yet one more person, it spit out the last garbage it could. Isn't that the family disease of alcoholism? And I'd like to tell you that my sisters and I were out in the hallway when we were sad that my dad died. We were not. My sisters and I were like, ding dong, the witch is dead, da da da. And I don't tell you this story because I'm proud of it. I tell you this story because this is where the family disease of alcoholism, I believe, will take you. That you will be glad that someone has died rather than have to live in that reign of terror and all the crap and confusion and horror that goes along with the family disease of alcoholism. And what I believed that day, and I know what my sisters believed that day, was that the family disease of alcoholism was gone. I mean, or that the alcoholic was gone. And therefore, we were all going to be okay because now this, you know, what I've come to learn from that experience is all that happened that day was the alcoholic died. The alcoholism, the family disease of alcoholism was alive and well in me and my sisters. That was untouched by my father's death. And believe you me, no one was more shocked about that than me, because at that point I had been going to Al-Anon for a little bit. My dad died in 1981 of October. I started going to Al-Anon in June of 1981. So I'd only been going to Al-Anon but a few months. And so I wasn't anywhere close to loving and kind or forgiving. None of that was going on there. I was just going to Al-Anon, doing the deal. And a few months after my dad had died, and I was doing the steps. I was doing the stuff. I had a great, wonderful sponsor taking me through the deal here. But 3 or 4 months after my dad died, an incident happened, and I got really angry and pissy. And I don't know how you are, but when I'm really angry and pissy, I like to take that home and share it with my husband and my children and the people that I love and care about the most, because isn't that the family disease of alcoholism? And I did not want to be doing that. I'm going to the meetings. I mean, I'm at the meetings. I'm working the steps. I am serious about this stuff. And I don't want to be continuing this behavior. And I don't understand why I still am. And I remember going to my first sponsor that I had for the first 9 years. I was in Al-Anon until she passed away. My first sponsor, Jeannie, I remember going to her and telling her I'm doing this. And I don't understand, why am I still doing this stuff? Why am I still yelling and screaming at my family? Why am I still so angry about when I think about things my dad did to me? And then he's dead. He's not even here anymore. Why is that still bothering me? You know, just all the questions we ask ourselves over and over and over again, because again, how the family disease of alcoholism tries to keep a hold on me, keeping me living in those thoughts. You know, and I remember her telling me, you know, Larcine, you've done good work with the steps. You know, you've done good inventory work on your dad. She goes, but I'm here to tell you that Al-Anon isn't about the problem. Al-Anon is about the solution. You know? And she said, I'm going to give you an assignment and you're not going to like it. And she always prefaced it with, and you're not going to like it. Because I've never liked one weeny thing they have ever, ever told me to do in Al-Anon, because it always seems so trite and so stupid. You know, I come to Al-Anon with huge problems. And when I tell you my big problems, these are the answers I get from Al-Anon. Oh, easy does it. Let go and let God, one day at a time. And I'm like, really? Are you freaking kidding me? I have these huge things and you're telling me silly, you know, stuff like that. When in reality, again, how I am affected by the disease of alcoholism and how it manifests itself through me, a family member, is that it always takes all my problems. And after you've been living in the disease of alcoholism for years and years, it just magnifies your problems. I can't even look at what is actually happening in my life anymore. Anything just slightly goes off kilter and I'm a basket case, because I up it to the next level. I put a magnifying glass on it. This thing has happened. And now after this, then this, then this, then this, then this. And what happens is how I am affected by the family disease of alcoholism is I can take any problem. And when I magnify it under that glass of alcoholism, it becomes so insurmountable that I think there is no answer to this problem. And therefore I am paralyzed in fear. And therefore I stay angry and do all those character defects that I have developed that I think are protection for me. When in reality, all they keep doing is pushing me away from my higher power and from you guys. because I'm so afraid to be hurt. I'm so afraid, always afraid. Fear is always the underlying thing for me. So she said she was going to give me this assignment. And this assignment was, is that whenever I thought about, you know, anything my dad did to me and, you know, and I'm here to tell you, you know, I always tell alcoholics, you know, if you've ever had a drunken father show up at a school function when you're getting an award, I am here to tell you that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization isn't just reserved for the alcoholic. I mean, if you've ever had that stuff going on, then you kind of know the stuff that I'm talking about. And so she gave me this assignment. And the assignment was, you know, was that I was to go home and I was to think about a good thing my dad had done for me. And my initial reaction is that there's absolutely positively no such thing. You know, it's just, again, how I'm affected by the disease of alcoholism, because it is a disease of negativity, and that's what I lean in. You know, but then again, I always have rationalizations and justifications to back up, you know, everything I say. Because I told my sponsor, how am I supposed to think of a good thing my dad has done for me when the very first remembrance I have on the face of the planet is fear at my father's hands? You know, but again, one thing I learned right out of the gate that I believe was God's grace for me is willingness. Because I remember being at those first Al-Anon meetings and hearing someone say, if you're not willing to do something different, how can you possibly expect anything to change? So I've always been willing, and I consider that's God's grace that I heard that and it made sense to me and I believed it. I believed it from the day I first came here and I believe it to this day. You have to have some willingness if you want something to change. And I don't know how long it was, a week or two, and I remembered that my dad taught me how to drive. And if you're going to live in Southern California and area and marry an alcoholic of your own and track that sucker down, it's a skill you just got to have. You know, it's just the way it is. And so I remember going to my sponsor thinking, you know, she's not going to like this answer, but it was really and truly all that I had. And I remember going up to her and I sincerely hope that everybody in this room has been sponsored as I have been sponsored. And that's by, you know, people who just really want me to do well. I never understood sponsorship in that sense until I actually became a sponsor. I mean, it's just an amazing thing, I think, that happens here. Again, God does his work the way he does his work, and he will use you when he is smooth and you don't even know you're being used, or vice versa, or however that goes. But I've been always been sponsored by these people who just want nothing but the best for me, despite how irritable and argumentative and, you know, whatever I have been with them. You know, there's just been nothing but loving and kind coming back at me all the time, no matter how much, you know, I put all these other defenses up to supposedly protect me from these exact people that are trying to help me. But I remember going to Jeannie and telling her, well, I thought up a good thing my dad had done, and I, again, didn't think she was going to like it. But I said, you know, he taught me how to drive, you know, and now I'm prepared for the, is that all you got? Oh, heck no. I got the complete opposite reaction from her. You'd think I'd come up with the cure for cancer. The woman was freaking ecstatic, you know, and it was just like, and then, you know, what happened for me is that I didn't realize, you know, it was my rookie year in Al-Anon that when your sponsor gives you an assignment that there will be part two, you know, and now part two of this assignment was whenever I thought about, you know, some embarrassment, you know, some beating at my dad's hands, whatever the thing might have been. My dad hated having girl children. He always made us feel bad about that. Whenever any of those thoughts would creep into my mind, all she told me to do, she says, I just want you to take that negative thought and replace it with this positive one. You know, that he taught you how to drive. You know, and again, she went on to explain to me, she said, you know, your father died, you know, at a young age at 55 years old. He died with his, not only did he die drunk, he died with his children being grateful that he was dead. You're a parent and you have children. Is that what you want to have happen to you? Do you really believe that that's what your father wanted to have happen to him? Or can you accept the fact that he was a sick alcoholic and he paid the ultimate price, not only with his life, but dying with his children hating him? And do you really need to punish anybody more than that? You know, and again, and I don't mean to tell you that I grew up with this hellacious dad who liked to hit us and make us feel bad about who they were and all the other garbage that goes along with that. And then I came into Al-Anon and I did this little weenie assignment that my sponsor gave me. And now it's rainbows and butterflies out my butt. That is not what happened here at all. You know, what happened here is what my sponsor did for me is she gave me this really very, very, very precious gift. It's the gift of forgiveness. And it says in our Al-Anon literature that forgiveness is no favor. We do it for nobody but ourselves. And see, and I thought if I forgave my dad, I was letting him off the hook. And I was not willing, you know, to let him off the hook because it wasn't right. And Al-Anon has never told me that any of it was right. You know, what Alan has taught me through the process of working the steps and doing the inventory and looking at the character defects, you know, and looking at where, you know, all of that stuff goes on, being able to look at it from that different perspective. No, I never thought about my dad, you know, all of his children hating him, you know, and it never even crossed my mind because he deserved it. You know, and that's where the negative family disease of alcoholism wants to keep me, and all that hate, all that anger, all that stuff that keeps me out of the light of the spirit. You know, in reality, when I look at it that way, heck, who would want to die that way? Who would actually want to die that way? And so, so I've had this, you know, just absolutely, you know, and it was a phenomenal change for me to be able to look at it from that perspective. You know, and today when I think about my dad, you know, there's no more fear. There's no more about things. There is for sure. Because, you know, one of the things into the acceptance of all of that is the acceptance that, you know what, my dad's not going to get sober and we're not going to have this wonderful Christmas and blah, 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 because that's the dream thing. You know, because I see that happen in other families in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not what's necessarily going to happen in mine. But I'm here to tell you the forgiveness gift is as big as anything else that goes on in your life. You know, and to be able to get to that part, because in our Al-Anon literature, there's this, in the How Al-Anon Works book, there's this wonderful page and a half on forgiveness. And there's a line in there that says, forgiveness is no favor. We do it for nobody but ourselves. You know, and that's really, really, you know, because in forgiving my dad, what I did is I let my life move on. I get the shot at a good life. And if I tell you one thing tonight, I'm going to tell you that that's what Al-Anon does for me day after day after day, is it gives me the opportunity to have a shot at a good life. But I'm the one that's got to take the shot. And so it continually gives me all these opportunities, these steps, all, you know, the slogans, all the things that we have, their sponsorship, all the friends that we get in the program, you know, all the you know, speakers that you get to hear talk to you today, you know, about their experience. It's all about hope. I tell people, in Al-Anon, we have so much hope. We have it by the bucketful. Take all you need. There's absolutely no lack of it whatsoever. So anyway, when I was 17, I met my husband. I should have known there was something really wrong with him because my dad liked him right away, and that had, like, never, ever happened. It was really hard to date in my house because my dad had a lot of rules and regulations about dating. And plus, you got to remember, my dad is pretty much, you know, drunk most of the time. He's meeting these little weenie boys we're bringing home. And my dad's a very intimidating guy. He's over 6 foot tall. He had one eyebrow. He could raise like 6 inches off of this side of his face. So he just looked like the devil himself standing there. And we'd bring these little weenie boys home to meet my dad. And my dad would stand over them, and, you know, and he's an ex-master sergeant. And I'm here to tell you that voice never, ever goes away. And he would stand over these little weenie boys and he would, you know, ask them the questions. Where are you going? When are you going to be back? And then he would tell them what he would do to them if we were not returned in the virginal condition of which we left the house in the first place. So it's very intimidating to these poor little weenie guys that we were dating, you know, and the fact that my dad always had a gun or a hand grenade in his hand never helped matters either. But again, growing up with alcoholism, you know, that was my dad, you know, and when you grow up with that every day, I mean, you think someone with a gun or a hand grenade, but when you grow up with that every day, again, how I am affected by the disease of alcoholism is that just becomes normal behavior. It's normal behavior in an alcoholic home. And you get desensitized to that. It's just what my dad does. You know, I liken growing up in an alcoholic home is like having a bowl of crap in front of you. Now, I don't think there's anybody in this room that'll sit down and eat a bowl of crap in one sitting. But I'm here to tell you, from my experience, I'll choke down a teaspoon every day if it'll just make it be quiet. And that's, you know, again, how we become sick too. It says in the Al-Anon literature, when every good sense tells you there's something wrong with the alcoholic's drinking and thinking, you still hide how you feel and what you know. Because in order for me to live in this family and exist in this family, I have to rationalize and justify my dad's behavior. I have to make it be okay so it's okay for me to be there. Just how the family disease of alcoholism works. But anyway, when I was 17, I met my husband, and like I said, my dad liked him right away, so that should have been a clue to me that there was something wrong with him, but that went right over my head. And I remember going out on this date with him, and then we went on a bowling date, and then after that, we were going to go back to his house, and my husband was divorced and, you know, and had a child. He's, you know, I was 17, he was 24, and you know, and the fact that he was back living with his mom and dad should have been a clue to me that there was something wrong with him. But I remember going back to his house and we stopped at a liquor store and he'd ask me what I wanted to drink. And, you know, and I'm a rule and regulation person. I'm 17 years old. There are rules and regulations in the state of California. And I proceeded to tell him what the drinking laws were and that I was 17 and I was an underage minor buddy. And I know he heard that day what he still hears to this day when he doesn't want to hear what I'm saying. He heard blah, 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 blah. And he went in and got a gallon of Red Mountain wine, if nothing else, to impress me with his wine knowledge. You know, what do I know about wine? And we went back to this house and we're drinking this. And anyway, we were playing this game. It's called Pass Out. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it or not, but it's a legitimate game. You can still get it on eBay. It's a drinking game. Now, I don't drink because it's against the law for me to drink. But there's another rule that, you know, I must obey, and that's I have to win every game I play, okay, because that's how I've been raised in the Army. You must win. You will be victorious. There is no such thing as surrender. You know, you will be victorious. If you have to cheat, lie, steal, it doesn't matter. You will come up on top. So we're playing this drinking game. And so I don't know what I had, maybe a half a glass of the game. That's what that was all about. And then, and guess who drank all the rest of the wine? And I'm going to tell you what I remember about that night to this is what a great time I had. To this day, I still remember how much fun I had because he was so funny. He just, I was so at ease. I had such a great time. But I want you to know at this point, I had a list, you know, in my head about what my life was going to be like. I couldn't wait to get the hell out of that house I was living in. You could cut the hate in my house between my mom and dad with a knife. And boy, I can't wait to get out of there. And I'm going to get married and I'm going to marry somebody who loves me and who I love. And we're going to have nothing but all girl children. And he's only going to want girl children. And he's not going to be a drinker because I'm 17 now. I know that part of my dad's problem is the fact that he is just a mean, mean drunk. And I'm not going to have that go on in my new life whenever that shows up. But yet here I am on this date and this guy's drunk and I cannot wait. I cannot wait to go out with him. You know, and this is where I will stand toe to toe with any alcoholic in my ability to rationalize and justify what I want and how I want it. Because, you know, again, it doesn't take me long. I call it information from nowhere. It's still pretty much how I act a lot today. It's just, I just think crap up. I just do. I just float up here and the universe lands here, becomes fact for me, and I act upon it. And I don't ask anybody nothing. I just figure it out for myself. And that day, you know, now here we are. I really want to go out with this guy, but he's a drinker. It's number one on my list. No drinking. How can I go out with him again? And again, this information just lands in my head because I instantly figure out, you know, where my dad, when my dad is drunk, he wants to hit you and yell at you and make you feel bad about who you are. When my husband's drinking, he just wants to hug you and kiss you and tell you how pretty you are. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I can work with that, okay? That's got the potential that all us Al-Anons can only see in the alcoholics out there. I mean, that's what we could see, and so I could work with that. And so we started going out exclusively from that point on. It wasn't easy for me to date Butch, basically because he couldn't remember my name, but you can't let a little thing like that stop you from going out with an alcoholic now, can you? And I know my name is different, and I'm just going to real quick tell you my name story because my dad named me Larcine, and again, he wasn't happy about having girl children, but I was firstborn. So he said he was really, you know, the story he would always tell me is, you know, when you were born, I wanted you to be a boy so bad and I was going to name you after me. And then you were born and I was so disappointed that you weren't a boy. But because you're firstborn, I'm going to name you Larcine, which is the name of a town in Scotland, because my dad was very, very proud of his Scottish heritage. So he named me after this town in Scotland and he told me I should always be proud of it. I've been taught that since I can remember. So I've always been proud of it. Fast forward, my dad's dead. I'm in Al-Anon. I get curious about Larcine, Scotland. And again, before computers and Google and all that crap, you wanted information. You had to go to buildings called libraries. I go to the library, look up Larcine, Scotland, nothing, nothing on Larcine, Scotland. So I go to the reference librarian and I say, you know, I need some help. Can you find out, you know, about Larcine, Scotland? She goes, well, tell me about it. I said, it's the name of a town in Scotland. That's all I got. She goes, come back in 2 weeks. We'll see what we can find out. I go back to my little library 2 weeks later. The reference librarian says we could find nothing. There's no such place as Larcine, Scotland. Well, I am pissed off, boy. You know, I've gone through this whole freaking forgiveness exercise in Al-Anon with my dad, and here he is stabbing me from the freaking grave, and I am so angry. And then we have this friend in AA, and he tells me, you know, he goes every year to Scotland to go golf. He goes, you know, well, Scotland's a really old country. Maybe there was Larsen Scotland like thousands of years ago. Let me ask my friends in Scotland before you go whack-a-doodle. So he goes off to Scotland. He comes back 2 years later, or excuse me, 2 weeks later, and no one in Scotland has ever heard of Larsen Scotland. So now I'm going to change my name, Bite Me Dad. Okay, that's how angry I am, because that's where I go to. I am hardwired always for that reaction. When it doesn't go the way that I want it, when I get hurt, all I know how to do is get mad, because I can't be hurt. It's much easier for me to show you how pissed off I am rather than to let you see that I am hurt. And then now I'm at one of my husband's big AA speaker meetings, and this guy walks up to me and he goes, Larsen, you're not going to believe this, but I found out that Larsen is a Scottish word. And I'm going, you're kidding me. And he goes, it is Scottish for father was drunk when daughter was born, so daughter got a weird name. Now, you know what? I know that that's not true, but what he went on to say to me, you know, is, Larsen, I'm alcoholic like your dad is alcoholic. And I don't know if he read it wrong or he looked at it wrong or what happened there. He goes, but what I believe is that when your dad named you Larsen, he believed it was the name of a town in Scotland. And just because it's not wrapped the way that you want it to be, does it make it any less of a gift? And see, and left to my own devices, I'll be angry at my dad and I'll change my name. But what happens to me in Al-Anon, and what I have learned again and again through the process of the 12 steps, is when I bring it to you, you just show me a different way to look at it. And I get the shot at a good life if I so choose to take it. You know, because I remember going home that night and thinking about it and talking to my God about it. And I really couldn't believe that my dad would go to all that trouble to name me Larsen just so he could hurt me X amount of years later when I found out that it meant nothing. I don't believe that. I believe my dad believed it was the name of a town in Scotland. And I am so grateful for that. Now I have Larsen on my license plate. And a few years back, my husband got me license plate holders that say it's the name of a town in Scotland. And so far I've had two total strangers come up to me and tell me they have been there. You know, I mean, again, when it's a crazy world, but it happens. And but just a real quick, you know, when Butch and I got married, I mean, Butch was always out there. I mean, he was a drinker, and I mean, that was the deal for him. I mean, and he never hid it from me. He never pretended that he didn't do it. And he did a lot of other stuff that goes along with the drinking. Yet when I came into Al-Anon, if you would have said, Larsen, did you know your husband drank like he did or did the things that he did? I would have absolutely positively said I didn't. And that would have been a big fat lie, because again, how I am affected by the disease of alcoholism, it's really important that I look like the innocent victim here. But my husband was out there from the very, very beginning. And, I want you to know that, we ended up getting married because I ended up getting pregnant. I was 19 and, we've been dating for a few years, and I ended up getting pregnant. And I want you to know that Butch and I got married in church, and we got married in front of a minister. And I want you to know the driving force behind us getting married was absolutely the birth of that child. But I want you to know that when Butch and I got married in that church, you know, that he was sober that day, and I loved him, and I believed he loved me, and we were as sincere as any two people are when they get married. We wanted to love and cherish each other and take care of each other. But I'm here to tell you what we did know was that the day that we got married, not only did Butch and Larsen get married, but also the family disease of alcoholism was right there with us. We just didn't know it. Just didn't have any idea, you know. And today's a little bit even more special for me because today is our anniversary. So it was our 46th wedding anniversary today. And Butch and I, we go away for, you know, the weekend or something, you know, to celebrate our anniversary. But of course that got kaput. And so we ended up going back to the church where we got married not too far from here, you know, because we lived fairly close to where we got married and to our very first apartment and back to all the scenes of the crime. And it was just, and again, it's just a spiritual experience when you've been in the program and you see from where you've come to where you are today. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-blowing to me. And I am so, so grateful to the program, you know, that I know today how much I love my husband and how much the family disease of alcoholism almost ended that. And again, I just really have a very, very full heart, you know, because of what today is for him and I. So anyway, just real quick, you know, so he had to do all the stuff that he had to do. And we went in our marriage through 6 years of active alcoholism, absolute craziness, absolute insanity. And I had absolutely no idea what I was dealing with. because all I know how to do is get mad at it, because that's how I was raised. You know, there's a line in the big book under, I think it's more about alcoholism, and I think it's like the last page, and it has this description of this this hospital person, and he was saying how hopeless alcoholics are, and that two of the people whose stories were in the book or something like that, he definitely thought was 100% hopeless. And he said, had they tried to get into his facility, he would have done his best not to admit them because of their hopelessness in being alcoholics. And he said, because people like you are too heartbreaking. You know, and I remember reading that book, reading that line in there. And I mean, and if that's what, that's really what goes on, it's the heartbreak. And the only way, you can only get your heart broken so many times. And then the only other thing I know how to do to stop my heart from being broken is to yell at you and scream at you and try and manipulate you and do all those other things, because I just can't have my heart be broken anymore. Because there's so many promises and so many things, and I don't understand why. Because I know every time my husband promised me he wouldn't do it again. I know every time my husband promised me, after he spent an entire paycheck in one evening when we needed diapers and formula and we didn't have money to pay our rent, when I would, Larsine, I promise I love you, I'll never do it again. I know he meant it with every fiber of his being, until the very next time when it happens again. And again, as the non-drinking people, I don't understand. Because you're so sure, again, as so many speakers have said, I've been told all my life, if you work towards this, if this is what you want, if you love somebody enough, blah, 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 blah. But all of that does not work against the family disease of alcoholism. It just doesn't. I'm here to tell you, if loving could fix alcoholics, none of us would need Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon right now. But anyway, we went through 6 years of all of that fun stuff. And, you know, and just for the spirit of whatever, 6 years into our marriage, my husband got arrested one more time for drunk driving, which is absolutely no big deal. And because he'd been arrested many, many times for drunk driving, because this is back in the 70s, and you get arrested, you pay a lawyer $500, you're off and you're out. And somewhere in all that craziness, I had gone to an Al-Anon meeting. But when I sat at that Al-Anon meeting, you know, I was only interested in how to get them sober, and they were not telling me that at that meeting. Yet when I was sitting in that front row, what they were saying is, Larsine, do you want your life to be different? Yes, I want my life to be different. Larsine, what are you willing to do about it? Nothing, because it's not my fault. You fix him, I'll be okay. And again, the lie that I grew up with, the family disease of alcoholism, is that it's your fault, your problem. You fix you and that'll fix me. And then, like I say, fast forward, my husband ends up getting sober, and, you know, and it's all, you know, wonderful, and all this other stuff is going on. And you know how you guys are when you first get sober. I mean, oh my gosh, it's almost incredible to me. You know, it's just like, you're Superman, give me the checkbook, you know, and all this other kind of stuff. And I'm going to AA meetings with my husband, and it's just all a big blur to me. Because when my husband got sober, they didn't do nothing about family, nothing. They said I should go to an AA Al-Anon meeting. So I went back to that meeting that I'd been to, you know, that maybe a year before when my husband was still drinking. And when I got to that meeting, you know, I raised my hand and I said, you know, I was here a year ago and I asked you how to get my husband sober and you didn't tell me, and I'm not going to tell you how I got him sober now. And you know what they said to me? They said, keep coming back, because I am here to tell you, whether you're at an AA meeting or an Al-Anon meeting, when they tell you to keep coming back, and they said, because you've said the most asinine BS crapola, it's your only hope. That's the only thing they can do for you till your head pops out of your butt. And that's exactly what was going on for me, because I really believe once my husband got sober, that would fix me. And then 2 years into his sobriety, I'm here to tell you, I was a nutcase. I was as angry as I have ever been in my life. And my husband was good sober. I mean, when I say good sober, I mean, he wasn't just, you know, staying sober. He was working. He was being the best husband he knew how to be. He was being the best dad he knew how to be. He was bringing that program home and working it, despite how angry I was, despite how argumentative was, despite how much crap I gave him about going to AA meetings, because I don't understand. I used to go with him to AA meetings just to make sure he heard what he was supposed to hear. And I used to be paranoid to go to AA meetings, because I would say to my husband, how are they going to know I'm not an alcoholic? I don't know why that freaked me out, but it did. And he would take my hand and pat it and says, don't worry, they'll know. You know, I didn't realize, you know, I thought he was being complimentary, apparently not, and apparently you did. But I'm here to tell you, as angry as I went to those AA meetings, as much as I didn't understand, I was always made to feel welcome at Alcoholics Anonymous. I never left that meeting ever feeling like you were judging me or looking at me or giving me any kind of crap. And I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for that. I truly, truly am. Because I knew my husband was where he needed to be. You know, in 2 years into his sobriety, I came back to Al-Anon, you know, for me, not to get him sober or keep him sober. I came because I was just absolutely positively sick and tired of being sick and tired. And, you know, and I am, you know, a rule follower. I just jumped right in there and, you know, and I got a sponsor right away, you know, started working the steps right away, you know, and doing all the things that I've been taught to do here. You know, when I was about 7 years or so into Al-Anon, I come home and now we have two little boys and are, they're not so little, but Earl is 12 years old. And I come home from an Al-Anon meeting and my husband tells me that Earl has dropped acid. He's 12 years old, you know, and I am freaking out. And my husband's like, oh, it's okay. It's all right. Don't worry. You know, I've given him some milk and he's listening to Mozart, which is apparently, I guess, what you're supposed to do. I don't know any about this kind of crap, you know, but of course I'm not going to let him do that. He's 12 years old. I'm his mother, you know, so I'm in the bedroom with him and he's on his very first acid trip. And the way he tells the story today is apparently having your mother in your face when you're on your very first acid trip is not a lot of fun because I guess all he says, my head was just this giant balloon that was just bouncing over him all night long. And he keeps asking me when I'm going to make amends for that. And I'm going to tell everybody right here, never. You know, that was just not a fun ride for me. And, you know, and so I had to go through this thing with my kid, you know, from 12 years old. And, you know, and he had a really rough road to go. I mean, he just really, really did. And I struggled with it. And I'm not going to tell you that it was pretty, even though I was going to Al-Anon and doing the deal. You know, it's just kind of, it was the hardest time of my life. And maybe 3 years into his, you know, I had to return myself into Al-Anon because one more time I was trying to manipulate and control and fix the kid. You know, it's not about fixing. It's about how it affects me. Because I'll tell you how concerned I am about this kid and this kid's life. But if I really want to get down to the layers and I'm really doing the step work, what I get to find out is my most terrifying thing is what will happen to me if something happens to him. I don't know what I would do. I don't know what I would do. And but what I got to learn in Al-Anon is unconditional love. And my sponsor made me look up unconditional, and you know what it says? No conditions. And what that means is that there's nothing that kid can do that can make me not love him. But unacceptable behavior is unacceptable behavior. So so I got to turn that kid over. And that's just what I ended up having to do on a daily basis. You know, when he ended up having to leave our home because of all the stuff that was going on. And he just had a rough road to go. But when he would come home, you know, he knew that he would have to be sober to come into our house. And so, you know, and sometimes he could stay all day and sometimes he couldn't stay very long. But my husband and I got to tell him all the time is that we loved him and we cared about him and that he knew where there was help when he needed to get it. And I'm happy to tell you, when he was 36 years old, he turned himself into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and he's been sober. He's going to come up on 7 years in August. And I am so, so grateful again, one more time to AA, you know, for my son's sobriety. But, you know, to all the parents that have kids out there that are still doing the deal here, you know, my son didn't get sober because I'm in Al-Anon and my husband's in Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever, you know, you think is supposed to happen or how it's, my son got sober for one reason and one reason only. And for the same reason I'm in Al-Anon, for the same reason that I believe my husband's in Alcoholics Anonymous, and for the same reason that you guys are all in the rooms that you are in. And that's simply, but for the acceptance of God's grace. Because I know we say, but for the acceptance of God's grace, go I. But I believe it's, but it's all about accepting that grace into your life. I believe it's available to everybody. But the individual journey that you have to take has to be the acceptance of that grace into your life. When I accept God's grace into my life, then I just know, no matter what's going on, God is there. You know, through all of this stuff and the, you know, the self-isolation and all this other thing that we have to do, God is in the big picture. He is there. He's always there. He's always my touchstone, whether it's good or it's bad or it's this or it's that. Because through the seemingly bad, many, many things, you know, good come out. And that's what I am grateful for, because over and over again, when I practice these principles in my life, I get the shot at a good life. But it's my deal to take that shot. I get to have a relationship with a child, whether he's drinking or sober. It isn't about who, you know, that you get your big wish or you don't. It's about that no matter when my son was drinking, I was just as current with him as when he wasn't. And I am so grateful for that, because I don't have any regrets that I need to look back on any of that should anything bad have happened to him. You know, I used to have a hard time when people die. I used to just give my sponsor no kinds of grief about that. How do we pray for these people and they still die from this disease? And she says, Larsine, because you look at it from the wrong way, because you think God is taking them. And God doesn't take people. God just merely accepts them. And so that's the thing that I always look at. And so I want to be accepting of exactly what's going in my life, exactly how it's going on. So anyway, happy Holy Easter week to those of you that celebrate that. You know, to those of you that don't, happy Saturday. I wish you all the best, and I wish you all a shot at a good life. And thank you so much for having me and letting Alan on be a part of this.
Thank you so much, Larsine. So we've come to the end of the night. What I'd like to do is just give a quick shout.